Archer, and Steen looking to get in again. The goalkeeper come a long way, and Bailey stolen in. John Bailey, one-time non-league player, came into the professional game late at 26 and makes a dream first appearance at the big stadium with a goal.
Hello, welcome to the latest episode of the Lockdown Interviews. This is Back in the Net, the AFC Bournemouth podcast. My name is Sam Davis and thank you so much for joining us. If you're not a subscriber to our YouTube channel, we're nearing 3,000. It's mad, really. 3,000 people interested in what we've got to say about the Cherries. Pretty mad. But part of the series is chatting to players and staff that have been there and done it for AFC Bournemouth. And the person we've got today, well, he's been there and done it on the biggest stage possible. Let's do it. So yeah, we're joined by yet another character in the Cherries cavalry, by the way of combative midfielder John Bailey, a player that wore his heart on his sleeve, playing 137 games for Boscombe, spanning five seasons. He was tough, he got rough, but his tenacity encapsulated the Never Say Die era that most Cherries fans went through at the time. So he chats about the slippery characters, the clique of players that he simply couldn't stand, the rule he broke on the night before Wembley, plus how would have he dealt with what he calls the weasel? I wonder who that is. Forthright opinion, changing room fallouts, and the introductory phone call from Mel Machin where Bailey told him to F off. You couldn't make it up. He chatted to Jeff Hayward and Neil Dawson. Enjoy.
What an introduction that is, eh? I was trying to think of all the goals I scored. I can only think of four. I didn't realise I scored that many.
13 you got.
I could have.
We'll check the records. We'll check the stats for you. But first and foremost, how are you doing? I mean, how are you getting on in this this difficult time? You all right?
I'm doing well, thanks. Yeah, doing well, Jeff. Got three teenagers, so not too bad.
Full on, I bet. Full on. Well, look, let's wind back right to the start of your career, because before joining the Cherries in 1995, you had a lengthy spell with Enfield, and before that you were at Croydon. So just tell us about your journey into non-league football and then on to Bournemouth.
So I started at Croydon when I was 18. Got into their first team just after leaving the youth team. So played a few games for them and then got dropped for a game and went to see the manager and said, look, I'm not happy you dropped me, so I want to leave. So I put in a transfer request and Dagenham and Redbridge came in for me. Well, sorry, it was Dagenham at the time. So, I went to Dagenham, played for them, and then Dagenham merged with Redbridge, so it became Dagenham Redbridge. They wanted to keep me, but they didn't offer me enough money. So I phoned up the PFA and said to them, look, I explained the situation. They said to me, look, they can't keep you because it's a different club now. So Pat Staunton, who was playing at the time with me, he spoke to Enfield and Eddie McCluskey, and he said, look, come over there.
We had Sean Teal on the show a couple of weeks ago, and he was talking about how he wouldn't have had it any other way because he came through non-league and into the league, and he said he always felt he appreciated it more than, say, guys that had come, you know, through Manchester United Academy. So you'd have played with people like Mark Rawlinson and Russell Beardsmore, who'd had like the posh life, and you'd come up like the slum. do you feel like did it make you appreciate stuff more?
Looking back at now, yes. I mean, I was at Enfield for a couple of years, and I really wanted to play in the conference because, you know, I was 25, thought my time had gone. So I was, you know, really desperately wanted to play at a high level. A couple of weeks before the end of the season, we found out that we couldn't get promoted. So I was a bit gutted, went to see the manager and said, look, I really want to play in the conference. I want to go to another side. Then one day I just received a call from Mel. And it was bizarre because we had a guy called Paul Hobson who was playing for us. And he was a Northerner, just like Mel. And he phoned me. I got a phone call and he said, son, it's Mel Meachin. And I went, oh, fuck off, Paul. And he went, no, son, it's Mel Meachin from AFC Bournemouth. I went, Paul, fuck off, will ya? And he said, son, look, here's my number. Give us a ring. So I put down the phone. He gave me this number. I phoned the number and all of a sudden, hello, AFC Bournemouth. And I was like, oh, fuck. I believe it. So obviously put me through to Mel Machin. I said, oh, I'm really, really sorry. I didn't know who he was, didn't know much about Bournemouth. I said, I'm really sorry. I thought it was a friend of mine. He said, oh, don't worry, son. Don't worry. He said, started going, oh, we really like you. I want you to come down, have a chat. And I thought, I'm still under contract with Enfield, but, you know, if you're willing to do that, I'll do that. And it just so happened we'd won the league and our end of season tour was down at Bournemouth. So I left all the boys out on a night out and evening out and went to see, forget the chairman. Mel wasn't there at the time. Oh, God.
Was it Trevor Watkins then? No, Was it Ken Gardner?
Not that twat. yeah, Ken Gardner. Yeah, it was Ken Gardner. Yeah, actually. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was Ken. So I went down there and I thought, oh, he's a bit weird. Started showing me all the plans, what he had for the club and blah, blah, blah. So, yeah, then next thing, went back to the boys, went home, and then Mel phoned me the next day and said, look, we've put a bid in for you. Do you want to come and sign for us? And I thought, well, why not?
And were you always a midfielder, even in your non-league days? Is that your position?
Well, I started off at right back for Croydon. Okay. And then I was so young, I didn't know any other position. And then when Dagenham came in for me, I spoke to a guy called Joey Dunwell, who was manager then. And he said to me, look, if you don't play right midfield, we won't sign you. So that's when I became a right midfielder.
That was a question I was going to ask. So did you think, had you given up on league football?
Out
of blue, completely out of blue.
Yeah, well, another little story. So we just won the league and we played on the Saturday, but we still had two games left because we were behind because of the FA Cup run against Leicester and that. And I went out with a guy called L. James Hannigan. We went out for the whole weekend and we didn't sleep for a couple of days. And then we played Mowgli on the Monday and Mel came to watch me that game. And it was the best game I had all season. I set up two, I hit the crossbar. I was just, yeah, it was unbelievable. And then...
There you go.
Discovered the secret.
When you settled into training, did you, because we asked Sean Till this question as well, did you arrive with a bit of a inferiority complex, a bit of self-doubt?
Oh, totally. I mean, when I was playing non-league, I mean, no manager ever said anything to me. I mean, I was, you know, they just left me alone and whatever. But when I went to Bournemouth, I thought, oh, bloody hell, this is just weird. I mean, the first time we were going pre-season, we were going over to the Isle of Wight. There was me, Jamie Victory, Mark Rawlinson and Marcus Oldbury. We were the four new boys.
Yeah.
And I thought, you know what, I'm going to be really sensible. And on the way over there, everyone was just drinking. Everyone was the new lads. And I thought, that's a bit weird. Do you know what I mean? I thought I'd just stay a bit sober, won't get into any mischief. So we got there, started training, and I picked up a bit of an injury, and I thought, I think it was my hamstring. And I went to see Steve Hardwick, who was shit, by the way. absolutely useless physio. And I said to him, Steve, my hamstring's really sore. And he said to me, yeah, you're going to play. I went, but I can't, my hamstring. He said, if you don't play, Mel will have the right hump with you. So I thought, all right, I'll play then. So anyway, I think we lost 2-1, but the winning goal for Bristol Rovers, it was my man, but I couldn't move. So he came in after the game, and I was sitting there, and I thought, oh, well, if, you know, we lost 2-1, doesn't matter. And Mel went, you, son, what? And he was absolutely slaughtering me, and I thought, oh, crap. And I just nodded my head, and that was it. He went berserk. He's frothing at the mouth. And he went, you'll never play for me again, ever, ever. And I thought, I've not even kicked a ball. I was absolutely bricking myself. And then
first pre-season friendly, bloody hell.
Yeah, and then we went back over on the ferry, and I was absolutely gutting. I thought, that's it. I've not even kicked a ball yet. And then on the Monday morning, we went to training, but we was training at the ground. And if you went underneath the stand, it was about, you could only get one person through the hallway. And I'll never forget, I walked through the door, and then all of a sudden Mel Machin's coming the other way, and I thought, oh no, what's he going to say? And he walked up to me, put his arm around me, and he went, all right, son, how are you doing? How's your weekend? And I thought, what? You've just absolutely hammered me. So it wasn't what I was used to, and yeah, it was a big eye opener.
It sounds like you had a great relationship with Mel. Would you agree with that, John?
well, the thing is, Mel was really old school. He really was. If you did what he told you to do, you were fine. I mean, we had some good players at Bournemouth at the time. I mean, it was the centre forward. We had, put it this way, if you didn't, no,
yeah, it's that big player, Fletcher, wasn't it?
I said good centre forward. No. If you did what he said, you know, you got on really well with him. But if you didn't want to cross him, because he was, he was a bit mental.
And how did he work with Willow? How did the two sort of combine?
Don't ask me that. I'm sure Willow won't mind me saying this, but so we used to go training, and so John would take us training. He would set up everything, and then Mel wouldn't come until later. And then Mel would come through the forest, and he'd look around and see what everyone was doing, and he would say to John, what are you doing? Pick the cones up. So we gave John Willow the nickname of Johnny Pickup.
Well, Sean O'Driscoll, he was a first team coach as well there, wasn't he, as well at the same time?
No, hated Sean.
Was he not there as a, was he not part of the coaching team?
No, he was youth team.
Youth team, was he? Right?
Yeah, just as I left, he took over.
Yeah.
I don't think Sean and I would have got on.
No, I think he liked people that just, he was quite quiet when he liked people that listened to him. And
yeah, I mean, I was injured at the time, but looking at his sessions, his training, no. I couldn't have done that.
And John, you joined after the euphoria of that great escape season, 94-95. And what was it like coming into that sort of changing room? And did it take you a while to break into the first team?
Well, when Mel originally phoned me, he said, I want you to play right midfield. We've got a right midfielder there now, and I think he's had his days. And he went, Russell Beardsmore. Hmm. And I went, Russell? You want me to take Russell Beardsmore's place?
Oh, yeah.
I was like, really? Because Russell Beardsmore was like, he was a Fergie fledgling, wasn't he?
Yeah.
So it was difficult. The thing was, I had a kid quite young, so I had to leave my family behind and had to go into digs. And I really, really struggled. I even went into Mel. halfway during the season and said to him, look, I'm not happy. I want to go home. I want to go back to non-league. I went and watched a game at Anfield and spoke to the manager there at the time, who was George Borg, and said, look, I want to come back to Anfield. And so we spoke, and he said, well, go see your manager at Anfield or at Bournemouth and tell him what you've just told me, and we'll sort it out. So I went to Mel, and he was brilliant, actually. He was absolutely brilliant. He said to me, look, I understand, but he said, pack your bags, go home, and travel in every day. He said, and then see how you get on. So that's what I did. I just packed my bags and just went home and traveled in. And then within a couple of weeks, I was playing better. I was back in the team. So, yeah, it was, that's what I did.
I think that's Steve Hardwick on the phone.
Yeah,
sorry.
What did you say about me?
Well, we never called him Steve Hardwick. We used to call him Steve Hardon.
I bet I would imagine he grew up getting used to that, though, when he was a kid.
Honestly, he was a really nice guy. The facilities at Bournemouth at the time were not good.
Yeah, not good.
Injured people used to go in there, and he used to have this ultrasound, and he used to do the ultrasound, and a couple of months later he had it looked at, and the guy said, oh, it's broken, it's not been working.
Yeah. I remember one of your first, I think when you first broke into the team, I remember as fans we always thought that you were like a sort of a ball winning right-sided player. And I remember seeing you play in one game. It might have been away at Luton, but my memory might be escaping me, where you had a really good game. And it was surprising because you had a lot more tricks than you. You weren't really a ball winner. You were quite a tricky player. You got past people. You had a bag of tricks, didn't you?
Well, I thought I did. When I was at Anfield, that was my game. But then when I went when I came to Bournemouth, Luton, we played them in the, I think they were a division higher than us at the time. We played them in the cup.
That was it, yeah.
And Fletch got injured. That was when he had his bad knee. So at half time, Fletch came off and I came on. And that was my first, I came on for 10 minutes against Bradford at the start of the season, where we lost 1-0. Yeah. And then Luton was the next game in the I think it was the Littlewoods Cup at the time.
Yeah. No, I remember that one. And then you really established yourself in the second season properly. And you had a great partnership with Neil Young, didn't you, on the right hand side? Which I always thought if you were like a dainty left winger playing for the opposition, that must have been an absolute nightmare. But was that something you worked a lot on, or was it just natural?
Do you know what? I don't want to blow our trumpets, Neil and I, but not much got down our side. I mean, we had a great understanding. And I remember in training when Mel used to work on stuff like, you know, because it almost felt like he was the winger and I was the right back, because he'd play it to me and then he'd just go. He'd run past me. So I'd have to pass him. The amount of times we had an argument in training, Neil and I, that I used to say to him, look, I'm the right midfielder, you're the right back.
Yeah.
Let me do that. But no, yeah, we had a good understanding, Neil and I.
Was that also the season when we had in our back four Rio Ferdinand for a time, and Michael Dewberry as well?
Was that the second?
I think it might have been the second season.
Yeah, that's one of my claims to fame, actually, Rio, because I used to pick him up and drop him home.
Did you teach him everything he knew?
No.
I wonder if you'll look back and say it was those car trips where I learned how to track a centre forward.
He was 19 when he came to us. He was just, yeah. I mean, Mel used to call him Class. He never used to call him Rio. Class, come here, Class.
That was great. And we went on a really good run in that season, didn't we? I think we had a record number of clean sheets or something with those two playing. I mean, it was fantastic. It must have been a great side to play in, wasn't it, that team?
Do you know what, Jeff? I can't remember much about that year. It's very vague that year. I can't even remember where we came. Didn't we struggle?
That year. I wrote it down. I think we came 16th.
That's all I can remember. We did struggle that year. Actually, I think it was after. Because Rio left, he went to Leeds. I don't know what Michael Dubry did. But yeah, it's very vague that year.
Obviously, one of the great players in that side was Eddie Howe, wasn't it? Could you see that, is obviously he got his move to the Premier League and unfortunately it didn't last. Could you see the player that he was?
No. No, I mean, he was a good player. Was Portsmouth in the Premier League when he went there? He got injured.
Premier League. He played one game, I think.
He got injured at Preston, I think. I think it was against Preston he got injured. But he was a good player. He was just like me. He just worked hard. He wasn't the most gifted player like me. And he'd admit that. I didn't see that. And I didn't see him being a manager either, if I'm honest with you.
Well, that was going to be my next question. So because I think a few people have said that, not just about Sean O'Driscoll, but also about Eddie Howe, is that if they were going to write a list of players who they thought were going to make it as managers, they wouldn't have been on it.
So if Eddie made his debut, I think, 96, was it? 96, 97?
Yeah.
And if you'd have gone round the change room and said, who will be a manager, he would have been the last person. Yeah, no question. He'd have been the last person you'd have thought of.
So something else that was pretty difficult around those times was the financial troubles the club was in. Tell us what it was like playing in under those sorts of difficulties. I mean, you weren't even sure you were going to get paid some weeks, were you?
You know what? If I'm honest with you, it didn't really affect us as players. It doesn't affect you. It doesn't really affect you. Yeah. I think at the time, was it 96, 97, the first time?
Yeah, I think so. No.
The thing is, it did affect us as players. And at the time, I was I'm a Tottenham fan, but I also supported Millwall. And a lot of my friends were Millwall supporters, and Jamie Vinson, his dad knew the Millwall chairman. And at the time, he said if the club does go bust, then he would have Jamie and I.
Okay.
So, yeah, I mean, I don't think it does affect the players. I think that's rubbish. You know, it doesn't. What goes on outside of the football, I don't think it affects players.
Were you at the Winter Garden? You were at the Winter Gardens, though, weren't you? When with the 2,000 fans crammed in and the buckets going around.
Yeah, with the buckets. Yeah.
I mean, that must have been quite moving when you saw the effort that all the community's going to keep the club going.
It was unreal. I mean, like I say, I just joined the club. I didn't know much about what was going on. It was the thing is, the only person I can remember from those sort of days is Dave Stone.
Oh, right. Yeah.
I mean, I think he was, he was influential with all the stuff that went on then, wasn't he?
Yeah. He's still a big fan now.
And you mentioned Trevor Watkins briefly earlier. So what was it like when he sort of came in and took control?
I don't think he really came in and took control, did he?
He told a story about taking all the money from the Winter Gardens and taking it out and leaving it in his car overnight or something, which I thought was kind of unreal.
I don't know too much about that. Mel, when Trevor was there, Mel ran the club. It wasn't, Trevor Watkins didn't have any say in anything at the club. It was all Mel. The thing is, he wrote a book, didn't he, Trevor? Did you ever read the book?
I did, I think, yeah. It wasn't ever going to win any literary awards, was it?
Well, I fell out with him over the book because he put something in there about me. And I thought, no, I went in and saw him. when I heard about it, and I wasn't happy with what he put in there. He called me a street urchin.
Did he?
Yeah, he called me a street urchin. I was not happy.
No.
He said, oh, I can't remember what it actually said, but yeah, I wasn't happy about it. I didn't like him. Slippery.
Yeah.
Slippery.
Yeah. Was he a solicitor by trade, I think?
Yes, he was, yeah.
Yeah. So, all right, obviously didn't appreciate people that come up on the other side of the tracks.
Well, let's talk about happier times then. The following season was Wembley. So what do you remember of the road to the famous stadium, that cup run?
So I think more the steps. So from the semi-final, I think we played Walsall away. Russell Beardsmore scored, and I think Mark, was it centre-half? What's his name, the French guy?
Frank Rowling,
I think.
Yeah, Frank Rowling.
I think those two scored the goals.
Yeah.
And then the second leg, it was mad. I mean, we were 2-0 up, we're at Wembley, and then they went 2-0 up. And then I think Youngie scored, didn't he? Neil Young scored to make it 2-1. Was it Youngie?
Can't remember.
Well, Frank Rowling definitely scored in the second game, didn't he? I think he scored.
Yeah.
He scored the crucial goal. It was, we lost, but we needed that goal to get to Wembley.
That's right. We lost 3-2. He scored the goal. And then, we couldn't get off the pitch. So there was me and Coxie who couldn't get off the pitch. So it was just mad. And then I thought, oh, we're at Wembley. Oh, I was going mad. And then got into the changing room and it was all silent. And so me and Coxie sort of run through the door and it was all silent. We were going, wah! And we looked around and it was like, what's going on? And Mel went, fucking useless, boys. And we were like, but we're through. It was weird. Yeah, it was weird.
It was weird as fans as well, because you don't, I mean, we went absolutely mental at the end. It's really weird to go mental at the end of a game you've lost.
Yes.
I guess if you support a team that plays in Europe, you might go through that quite a bit. Yeah. But obviously, we never have. So it's a weird thing.
Yeah, it was for us. I mean, Coxie and I. Well, Coxie came from non-league as well. So
yeah,
it was weird for us. And then to get through to the final, I mean, the week leading up to it, it was brilliant. It was just. You know, we had the song "Cherries Alive."
Oh God, yeah.
When it went into the studio to do that, that was brilliant. Well, you can tell by the way I use my walk, I'm a woman's man. No time to talk. Music loud and women warm, been kicked around since I was born. Now it's all right, it's okay. You may look the other way. So we all had sort of like little bits. I think it was me, Coxie, Fletch. I think there was a couple of others who had like little cameos in it.
Yeah.
And so we all did that, and then we went home, and then Fletch went back to the studio and said, I don't like my bit. He said, can I change it? So he actually went back to the studio and re-recorded his little cameo in it.
He is such a professional, isn't he?
Oh, professional?
Yeah, I'm being ironic, right?
Yeah.
Fletch talked a lot about his, before he changed and became Better Living. He was a right party animal in those days. Did you ever go out on the sauce with him?
He was the life and soul of the party, Fletch. Yeah, he really was. I think it was the injury he got in 95 after the Luton game. He was out for a year. After that, and was told he'd never play again. And I think that's what really sent him over the edge.
Did you feel sorry for Frank Rowling? Because, I mean, he scored in every round and then doesn't play.
No.
You didn't, no?
No. He was French.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. I hated all the French lads that were there. They were horrible. You had Frank Rowling, you had Bolly. You had Bo, is it?
Well, there was Berta, Mohamed Berta.
Yeah.
I mean, I was going to come on to them. I mean, those two, I mean, how and why did they ever get to play at the club? I mean, it must have been weird having French players who only played for, a few games, didn't they? And then they moved on again.
Well, Willie Huck as well. Yeah, yeah. I didn't like any of them.
Were they a clique? Did they just used to hang around together?
Yeah, they did, definitely. Yeah. I remember one training session, we, because I didn't like any of them, and I weren't afraid to tell any of them. And I remember one training session, me and what's his name? The big boy. What's his name?
Roger Billy.
The big one in mid, he used to play right back.
Mohamed Berta.
Yeah, Mohamed, yeah. Yeah. So we went in for a tackle, and then all of a sudden he grabbed me by the neck. She got me up by the neck because he knew we just didn't get on.
One of my favourite memories of that era was seeing him playing at Basingstoke Town away in a cup match. And I imagine thinking, what must he have thought turning up at that game?
I remember it well because he was playing central midfield and I was playing right midfield. And at half time, Mel said to him, "You are shit. You can't play central midfield." So I went to central midfield and then he went to right midfield.
Yeah.
After that, I don't think he played many games.
He didn't. Although he did score. No. I always remember the only thing he did do was he scored 130-yarder. It's one of the hardest I've ever seen anyone hit a ball in my life. But I think that was about his only contribution to the club, wasn't it?
Yeah.
The week leading up to it was, yeah, it was probably better than the game itself, actually. Although I did score, but it was, we had
did you
a great
stay time. Away a hotel night before? Did you do the old big coach going in, like FA Cup job?
Well, yes, we stayed in the hotel the night before, and I'll tell you a little story that probably I shouldn't tell you, but I will do.
No, you should. You should. Many, many years have passed. You're safe.
So many, many years have passed. So Emma, my late wife, she came and stayed at the hotel the night before that game. And if Mel would have found out, I don't think I would have played.
Oh, fantastic. Fantastic. Yeah. I mean, the whole experience of going into those changing rooms, Wembley Way and all of that. I mean, I know it wasn't the FA Cup, but it was massive for the town. Mm. What was it like? Just the excitement on the coach and the build up on the day itself must have been something, wasn't it?
Well, when you grow up, you see all the they used to do the FA Cup from 11 o'clock right to the, through to the kickoff and that. So we left the hotel. And as soon as we left the hotel, there was just coaches and coaches of Bournemouth supporters bibbing and flags out. And then when you drive into Wembley, it was brilliant.
It was a mate. I mean, me and my dad always laugh about it. It's the only game my mum's ever been to. She went on a bus from work and we're like, she suddenly announced her, so I'll be there as well. Because we'd had our tickets for ages. And we're like, buses of like women from hotels going. It was absolutely amazing. So your goal... I watched it back today, actually, to refresh my memory. Did you have a mini crap yourself moment when you realised it was
an open goal?
I think I only scored two that season. So one was against Southend when we lost 5-3 away,
yeah.
And that one. And friends of mine had actually put money on me to score. It was 33-1. One of my friends had £40 on it, won £1,200. But, yeah, I mean, it was such a bizarre feeling, you know, scoring and then just running away. And because the thing was that the week before, all the players who normally score were practicing their celebrations and all that.
Yeah.
And I never got involved because I didn't score. And then when I scored, I run away and I look around and no one's there. And then all of a sudden, Robbo comes and jumps on me. But, yeah, no, it was brilliant.
I bet Fletch had spent hours doing his practice in front of the mirror. He would have had it all signed off.
The thing that struck me, I mean, going to Dean Court where you're in amongst a crowd of 5,000 and then suddenly at Wembley and there's like 70,000, 35,000 Bournemouth fans there. What was it? What must that feel like for you?
Every kid's dream, isn't it? I mean, you know, you grow up thinking of playing at Wembley. Every kid who plays football dreams about that. I was no different.
It was the strangest way to lose a game, because I don't know how many games of professional football have had a golden goal in them. There can't have been many. I've only ever seen it on when you're playing FIFA. And I was telling my lad about it the other day, and I said, yeah, there was an actual game that I've actually watched. I mean, that was it. Like, whistle gone, over. Horrific, wasn't it?
I think it was the only year they did the golden goal. Yeah. But if I'm really honest with you, it was a day out for everybody. It was a cup game. There was nothing riding on it. There was no promotion or anything like that. So although we'd lost, it didn't feel like that to me. Yeah. We had a party afterwards, whether we won or lost. Yeah. And the party felt like it was for me because I'd scored. I mean, I couldn't stop smiling all night.
Fantastic memories.
Mel was legendary for his bollockings, wasn't he? What's other than, like you said about yourself, what other players do you remember, anyone else getting spectacularly taken apart by him?
Yes. We played Warsaw away. We lost 2-0, and Rob Murray, the ball got played over the top, and Mel absolutely crucified him for the whole half time. And that was the last game he played, Rob, because he answered Mel back. Right. Told Mel to F off. And Mel was not happy about that. But the best one was we played Burnley away. It was an evening game. And we lost 1-0, but we had a penalty, and Robbo was our penalty taker at the time, and he hit the post. And at half time, I think it was half time or full time, Mel came in and went, "Why didn't you put it the other way?" and Robbo went, he started going, and all of a sudden, he sort of told Mel F off or something, went into the toilet, and then Mel followed him, grabbed him by the neck. I was trying to fight him, and then me and Jason Brissett, like, because we were near the door, we ran in there to drag Mel off him.
Blimey.
Yeah, he was during the game, after the game, he was mental. But you go in on a Monday morning and he was a different, completely different person.
Are you still in touch with him, John? Are you still in touch with Mel?
No. I've not spoken to Mel since I left, actually. He said some nice things about me in the press afterwards, actually. So, yeah, I've got a lot to thank Mel for.
You mentioned Jason Brissett there. That was a name I forgot. Now, he was an interesting player, wasn't he? Because he was either... So one game in eight, he looked like Lionel Messi, didn't he? And then the other seven games, he looked like Lionel Blair.
I think you're being a bit kind to him, one in eight.
Oh, no, that's a spectacular effort. That was pure magic. Jason Brissett with one of the best goals of the season so far. And just coming up to half an hour, Bournemouth go one up with a spectacular goal from Jason Brissett.
No, but, I mean, didn't he have some talent, didn't he?
The thing was, we played a 4-4-2, and I was right midfield, he was left midfield. But when Mel used to, whenever we did anything in training or half time or anything, they used to say, "Get the ball to Briss." Never to me. It was always Briss. I would always have to tuck in, and Briss would be. But you're right. He was such a good player. But yeah, he was 1-8. But Jason and I didn't really see eye to eye, really, because when I was really struggling when I first joined, when Mel used to name the team, he used to laugh when I wasn't in it. He used to absolutely hammer me when I wasn't in the team. And then when we used to travel, Jason and I used to meet up. So he used to travel one day and I used to travel the next. And we wouldn't talk the whole way. The whole way we wouldn't talk to each other because I just didn't like him. But we just had that sort of agreement that we'd get in each other's cars. And
We had some real quality players around that time, John, as well. That sort of era, there was... Ian Cox was a great player. There was Robbo, of course, was great. We had Mark Steen. He played with Richard Hughes, Jamie Vincent. I mean, we had some real quality, didn't we, in that team?
Yeah. No, we did. We you know, I think it was 97. Was it 97? We finished seventh.
We should have gone out that year, I think.
We should have. I mean, yeah, we were in the top six the whole time, and then last game of the season, we blew it, didn't we, against Wrexham?
Why do you think that team didn't achieve what it should? Was it down to tactics, or was it individuals, or luck, or?
If I'm honest, I think it was down to Mel. Really, he was old school. There was no. I mean, our week was so we'd play a game on a Saturday. We'd have the day off on a Sunday. Monday, we'd run from Boscombe Pier to Bournemouth Pier, have a hot chocolate on the pier. Tuesday, we'd have a game. Wednesday, we'd have off. Thursday, we'd have a blowout because we'd been out. Everyone had been out in Bournemouth on the Wednesday. Fridays would be free kicks and set plays and stuff like that. So there was no tactics with Mel. No. It was almost like go out there and do what you can do.
Yeah.
Which, considering the talent of some of those players, I mean, it sort of worked, didn't it? It nearly worked.
But I think if Sean would have been in charge that year, I think we would have probably made the playoffs. And that's no disrespect to Mel at all. I love Mel. And, you know, like I say, I've got a lot to thank him for. But tactically, there was no.
I remember seeing some fantastic goals that season from Mark Steen. What was he like to play with?
Frustrating. I mean, yeah, quality player. But, yeah, I had a few run-ins with Mark.
Yeah.
He was lazy. He was too, you know, he'd score a goal and, you know, but, yeah, I didn't like him.
Him and Fletch were the perfect partnership for lower league football, I always thought, weren't they? Flick on, and the one would flick on, the other one run on and score. It was like lower league football at its best, wasn't it?
Yeah, I mean, Fletch was, yeah, he did all the work. Fletch, I mean, Mel used to hammer Fletch as well.
Hmm.
Yeah, used to absolutely hammer him for not making the runs, and I don't think he ever said a bad word to Mark Steen. Yeah.
And we had another player in that team who always fascinated me, Christo Warren, who looked like, again, on his day, bags of talent, but just sort of too few the day when he really was on it.
The thing was, I felt sorry for Christo because he was a centre forward. He came to Bournemouth as a centre forward, and Mel made him into a left back, which he wasn't. He wasn't a left back. So I did feel a bit sorry for him, but yeah, he was a good lad, Christo. I really like Christo.
We used to have a running joke, me and the people I used to go with matches to at that time, that everyone got made into a left back by Mel, because Russell Beardsmore played right wing for Man United.
That's
got
made right, a left back.
And so how do you do that? Christopher Warren was a centre forward for Southampton, got made a left back. It's like whoever rocked up, I could see a left back in you.
Yeah, I know. Well, that was Mel. He had an eye for players, but at the same time, he ruined some players at Bournemouth. Mel did. Dave Town, I don't know if you remember him. Dave Town.
Yeah.
I mean, in training, he was just incredible. He's finishing, everything about him, you'd think this kid is going to go far. And yet, in a game, he just had to put one foot wrong, and Mel would absolutely destroy him.
It's interesting you say that, because I always thought Dave Town looked nervous on a football pitch.
Yeah, he was. He was. But in training, if you saw him in training, he was a totally different person.
Nah, fascinating.
And then you had Jimmy Glass in goal. What was playing in front of Jimmy like?
Look, Jimmy and I didn't get on when we played together. I just didn't like. Yeah, we just didn't get on. But you know, I get on really well with Jimmy now. He gets me tickets for games and stuff like that. But at the time, yeah, I didn't get on with him. He never took no responsibility, Jimmy, for his mistakes. I remember his first game we played Hull away. We at their old place, we drew 1-1. And I think we were 1-0 up. It was about 10 minutes to go. And the guy from the opposite side from where I was playing, he he put a cross in, and I was just about to header it away, and Jimmy went, "Goldie's ball." And as he came out, he missed it, and I sort of ducked because he called, and then the guy behind me put it in, scored. And then we got in at full time, and Mel said, well, Mel really laid into me and said, "That's your fault, blah. Why didn't you header it away?" And I went, he said, "Goalkeeper's ball." And as I turned around and pointed to Jimmy, Jimmy went, "No, I didn't." So that's how it all started with Jimmy and I. I just thought, no, yeah, you could have owned up to that one. But the best one with Jimmy was, who did we play? We played someone, we drew 3-0 at home. Oh, God, who was it? Anyway, we came in at half-time. Mel blamed him for one of the goals. He walked out of the changing room. Didn't even listen to the team talk, just walked out of the changing room. That's why Mel got rid of him.
Yeah.
Because he had too much to say, Jimmy.
So your career started to come to an end through injuries. What was there, like a series of injuries, one bad one, or how did it come about?
Yeah, we were playing head tennis in the car park.
Oh, bloody hell.
Yeah, so there was me, Fletch, Robbo, Scott Mean. I can't remember who else. But yeah, you know the barriers the police use to keep the crowds apart? They're only about 4 foot tall. We were playing head tennis with those, and I think I was on Fletcher's side. He headed the ball, and I was trying to head it over, but with my back to the railings, and fell on the railings, and that's how I did my back.
Bloody hell.
I never knew that.
Yeah, so that's how I did it. And then we played, Oldham away, and I said to Mel, "My back doesn't feel right." He said, "Oh, just travel with us and see how you feel." So I went. Steve Hardwick tried to do something to my back, and he made it worse. And so I didn't play for a couple of weeks, and yeah, it just wasn't the same. And every time I tried to come back, it just wasn't right. And then we played Colchester, Willie Huck's first game, and Robbo was on international duty with Northern Ireland, and Richard Hughes was with Scotland under 21s. So I went out for the warm-up. I come back in, I said, "Mel, I can't play. I'd had anti-inflammatories, I'd had Nurofen, so I'd had loads of painkillers before I went out there, but I could still feel it. It was really bad." And at the time, Mel was going to have an operation on his hip. He was on crutches, I think, at the time. He was struggling with his hip. So I came in before the game. I said, "Mel, I can't play. Honestly, it's just too bad." And Mel went, "Son, come on. I need you. He said, "Look, I'm having a hip operation." He said, "I've got these painkillers. They're really strong."
Jesus.
He said, honestly, it's God's truth. He said to me, "Take a couple of these." So I'd already had loads anyway. So he gave me these painkillers. And I thought, me being me as I was, I just took them. And then all of a sudden I started the game. I thought, "Oh, my back is killing me. I can't move." And then all of a sudden I was thinking, "Oh, must be in my head." Felt fine. But then, next day I couldn't even get out of bed. And I didn't play for months after that. Yeah,
is it one of them injuries that if you played now for a Premier League club, they'd have sorted it out, or was it not a reflection on what level you're at?
Do you know what, Neil? The thing was, when I got injured with the back, Steve Hardwick kept trying to get me back. He kept trying to. All what I really needed was rest. Mm. But when you're playing professional football, they don't see that. You need rest. They see you need to be in the gym. You need to be doing this. You need to be doing that. But it wasn't, because when I retired from football 9 months later, my back was fine.
Right.
So it was just rest I needed, and not painkillers, and not manipulation, and not, you know, inject. I mean, I think I had about 9 injections in my back up in London.
So did it? And did the club look after you? Did it end all right? Or
no, it didn't end well. Neil, didn't end well at all. So I still had a couple of years left on my contract. So I had 2 years left on my contract. I went in and saw Andrew Dawson. We sorted out a payment. He said, you know, look, I'll give you 6 months' money and then we'll guarantee you a game and we'll guarantee you £50,000 from the game. And Mel at the time had, he said, look, I'll get you Man United. We'll play Man United. You'll definitely get 50 grand. So then when the time came to play Man United, Mel called me in and said, look, we can't get Man United now. Just can you hang on a bit? And I said, well, not really, Mel. I need the money. He said, look, we'll give you a certain amount of money every month if you hang on. And I said, okay, then. So I'll do that. A few months went by, end of season. I went in. I said, are we playing? He said, look, I can't get you Man United, but I can get you Man City. So I thought, okay, I'll wait. He said, can you wait? I waited another couple of months. Then Peter Grant come in. And then they said, we can't get you Man City, we'll get you Celtic. Then it was Southampton. And this went on for about 2 years. And then they said, I moved house in June 2003. And in July, they sent me a letter saying, you're not getting any money. So PFA got involved. Anyway, I ended up getting probably £10,000 off the club. And they owed me 28,000.
Right.
And then the next minute, we went into administration. So I got told I wasn't getting anything. So, you know, that's how it ended at the time. But, you know, years, you know, as you know, I lost my wife a few years ago. And there was a treatment in Germany that she could have and it might, you know, might work and blah, blah, blah. So I went to Eddie. I said, look, Eddie, the club's in a good financial situation now. Any chance I can have the money? He said, John, listen, we can't do that. But he said, what I'll do is I'll do it like a question and answer night for you. So, Jimmy organised all that and we had that a few years back and, funny enough, that generated £28,000. So,
yeah, that was lovely.
How do you feel about the club now, John? I mean, some good memories, but obviously some painful ones too. How do you actually feel about Bournemouth and when you watch them play?
Do you know what? I think we were spoilt for 5 years. I mean, what a journey we went on for 5 years with Eddie, Premier League. It was unbelievable. I mean, I still can't believe that we've been in the Premier League, to be honest with you. So, yeah, a bit mixed, actually. A bit mixed.
Did you... could you ever see it happening? Because for us, it really was something that we never, ever foresaw. And it was just like a complete dream, particularly going up and then the first year in the Premier League. So when am I going to wake up and this is not real?
I think like every supporter at the time, we only thought it was going to last a year. Let's be honest, didn't we?
Yeah.
You know, little Bournemouth in the Premier League and then two, then three, then four, then five. I think we've just been spoiled. And you know, now people think we've got a divine right to be in the Premier League, which, you know, I put on Twitter that what we need to do now is just survive in the Championship. I mean, you got teams like Southampton who've been down to the first division. You've got teams like Leeds who've been down to the first division. They're lucky enough to get back up. Yeah. I don't think we would be lucky enough to get back up if we went that far down.
Where do you think it went wrong? Because we kind of consolidated ourselves and we probably went into last season with what was on paper the best squad we've ever had in the club's history. Where do you think it went wrong?
What, in the Premier, the last year in the Premier League? Where do you think it went wrong, Neil?
I don't know. I think maybe some of the players didn't have the hunger and desire that some of the older ones had. I think maybe we didn't adapt tactically, having played similar ways for a long time. I think it's a combination of a number of factors, really. But
I think Eddie got a bit obsessed with not losing games. He got a bit obsessed with the defence and forgot about, you know, the DNA of our attacking play, and you know, he just got a bit tired, I think, as well.
I don't see any of that, to be honest with you. I just see it as we had players, we had King, Brooks, we had the players that were, you know, playing international football, and I get it. We're struggling. They could lose their place, you know. King at Norway, and that little weasel. I mean, that little weasel has got a lot to do with it. Let's be honest. I mean, he admitted that he didn't play for the club for what, 6 months. So we played in the Premier League with 10 men for 6 months. You can't do that. You can't have players like that.
Yeah. We know what you mean, John. You don't need to say it. We know what you mean.
No, I don't. A lot of people don't realise what Eddie put into that club, what his backroom staff put in, how hard they work. I mean, I've been down there. They work their absolute socks off, and it really winds me up when I hear people say, "Oh, it's friends this and friends that." It's not. It wasn't. Eddie would not have people there if they couldn't do a job. Eddie Howe's probably one of his best friends was James Hayter. And I said to Eddie, what about James? What haven't you got anything here for him? And he said, John, no, I haven't. Yeah. And I was like, well, he's your friend. He went, but he can't get, he's got to offer me something. And all these boys here, they offer me something. And plus, I trust them. And he said, I trust every single one of them. And they work, they do work so hard. I mean, you know, it would be a shame if you know, if they get rid of all the Bournemouth contingent.
Were you surprised he went?
A little bit I was, yeah. But as soon as he went, I thought, I know what's happened. He's gone in. He's seen whoever and said, right, I want to stay. I want to get back up. This is what I want. Can you guarantee that? And the answer was, no, we can't. And Eddie's gone. See you later then.
You obviously played with both Jason and Eddie. So what do you think of Jason taking over? What about his appointment?
I was surprised. I was really surprised he took over because you've got to give it to him. He, you know, if it didn't work, that's it. He's finished in football. What else can what else can he do? So, you know, I was a bit surprised that he took over. I don't know whether he took over with Eddie's best wishes or not. I don't know. You know, whether he stabbed Eddie in the back or not, I really don't know. But, yeah, I was really surprised.
And if you were Eddie's agent, where would you advise him to go next?
Celtic, Newcastle, anywhere else?
I can't see it. I just can't. I think if it's not a London club, I can't see it. I mean, Jason's not going to last long. Come on, let's be honest. I'm surprised. I'm, you know, fair play to him. He took it on. He's got to go. He's got to go.
You don't think he's getting the best out of what he's got?
No. He's not going to get the best out of what he's got, Neil. He's not going to. He's an assistant manager. He's not a manager. They won't play for him. Look at Brooks when he came off the other night, kicking what this and that. Do you think they'd have done that with Eddie? They're not playing for Ed. They're not playing for Jason. They're playing for themselves. They're playing to get moves away. Some of them think they're too good for Bournemouth.
What would you say to them if you got a chance to give a team talk? What would you say?
What can you say to people who don't want to be there? What can you say to people like King, Brooks? I mean, I'd love to have been there when Fraser was there. Sorry, did I call him Fraser? Weasel.
You did, yeah. Yeah, you did call him Fraser, yeah.
Little weasel. How could anybody... Oh, just, yeah. It's one of those. Yeah,
we had Tommy Heffernan on the show, and I think he would have loved to have trained with Ryan Fraser as well.
Yeah. I mean, I just can't believe what he did. After everything that the club had done for him, Eddie did for him, why would you not want to play for Eddie?
Yeah, I think that was one of the things that Eddie got frustrated about last year. I think you could see that in the players, and that must have hacked him right off.
But what players? What players do you mean that would?
Well, you know, I mean, personally, last season, there were a lot of them that I thought underperformed. You know, Callum didn't have a great season, did he? Let's be honest. And that must have been a massive disappointment for him that he didn't score the number of goals that he was more than capable of scoring.
Yeah.
No, I think with Callum, I think what it was, he's an England international. They're struggling at the bottom of the league. And then he thinks, right, I need to get away from here. So, you know, the best way for him to get away from Bournemouth would have not been to keep him in the league, but to get relegated.
Yeah.
That was the only way he was going to get away from Bournemouth.
Yeah.
And it's a shame. It's a shame. It, you know, him, Weasel, King, Brooks, they're the main four because, you know, I mean, I can understand a little bit with Callum because he's playing for England.
Yeah.
But with the other three, you can play in the second division and still play for your country.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
You know, why are they down tools? I don't know.
Mm.
And you could see it because they weren't, you know, that side that went up, players like Mark Pugh and Simon Francis, Charlie Daniels, every game was an adventure to them, and they would run until they were absolutely exhausted. But you could just see in the lack of tracking back and effort last year that you move to what's supposedly a better class of player, but they haven't got that hunger of having played lower league football all their life. And that you could see it in the side, and that was the bit with maybe Eddie stayed with them some of them too long, or I don't know what it was, but.
And I think going back to players of your generation, John, you know, when you were playing that late 90s side, a lot of those players, you came from non-league, you know, Youngie came from a smaller club, didn't he? Or Tottenham, rather, Tottenham Reserves. Sorry, let me rephrase that. Tottenham Reserves, he wasn't in the first team. So he had a point to prove. What I'm saying is you all had points to prove in that side. And
Ian Cox was a brilliant player, he came from non-league,
Jamie Vincent had a point to prove.
Yeah.
You know, there were lots of players who were making the effort, and that's what we had when we went up to the Premier League. But I think all those players, they've got a bit long in the tooth, and the newer ones coming in were just different attitudes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like you said, the ones you mentioned who were hungry, the ones, and they're the ones that weren't playing for their countries. They're the ones that had things to prove.
Yeah.
The four that I just mentioned, I think it was just all to do with they thought they were better than they were.
Yeah. Well, they've still, you know, Kingy's still there, Brooks is still there. They've got an opportunity to put it right. So hopefully they'll listen to this and think, yeah, we'll prove you wrong.
No, they won't. No, they won't. Yeah. I mean, King's not going to go now, is he?
No, he's only got 3 days left.
And, Can't see it.
Even if someone comes in for him, he's still not going to go. He's going to wait to the end of the season so that he can just leave on a free, get more money.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So what did you do? What did you do after the game? I guess once you've taken the insurance payout, that kind of limits where you can play and stuff, doesn't it? What did you do?
So, well, funny enough, 3 days after I finished playing, I went and so before that, where I was living in Victoria Park Road in Bournemouth, I had a couple of brickies come round and build a wall for me. And I told them what I was doing and blah, blah, blah. And I was not playing. I was injured and I was thinking of, you know, retiring. And they said, so while they were round there, I knocked up for them. I knocked up all their muck. And one of the guys said to me, look, I think he was messing about at the time. He said to me, if you retire and you want a job, then, you know, we'll give you a job. So I said, okay, then. So when I retired, I phoned him up and I said, look, I've retired. Any chance there's a job? And he said, yeah, okay, you can come and knock up for us. So 3 days after I finished playing for Bournemouth, I went and was sort of like working on a building site. I went from getting £1,300 a week to £40 a day. So, yeah, I didn't waste any time, really.
And you've still had sort of connections with non-league football, haven't you? You've done some stuff in with some of the New Forest teams, haven't you?
Yes, I went around a few of the clubs. And then my son, I started coaching his side when he was six. And sort of left when he turned 18. Was at Brockenhurst.
And how's the back now?
Yeah, no, it's fine. It's fine. Yeah, it's just the knees and the calves and all that now.
So if we were to recruit you for a back of the net football team, you could join our all star side. Is that right?
20 minutes.
Super sub.
We'll bring you on as a sub for Willie Huck. That's what we'll do.
Yeah, no.
Fantastic. Well, brilliant. John, you know, thanks for joining us. It's been great to go down memory lane and to get your thoughts on the current team. You know, there's lots of stuff there that I'm sure fans will enjoy listening to. And you know, we're eternally grateful. Both Neil and I were there at Wembley and we'll never forget that. So
never forget that moment. And I still think it'll be a long time before another Bournemouth player scores at Wembley. So
I hope so.
I bet you were delighted when the playoff final was at the Millennium, weren't you?
I was even more delighted at Tottenham. Yeah, and it got disallowed, didn't it? Who scored it?
God, no, I can't remember now.
Yeah.
Anyway, I was delighted at that.
So still Spurs first, Cherry second, eh?
Oh, definitely, yeah, definitely.
Final question: who are you still in touch with out the old team? Who do you?
I Neil Young. I messaged, you know, we still keep in touch. Jonesy.
Oh right, yeah.
He came and stayed at mine in the summer. Yes. I messaged Robbo a couple of times. I messaged him the other week about him getting the sack or leaving or whatever.
Brilliant.
Awesome. Thanks, John.
It's
been great having you on and yeah, cult hero, you will always be one of those for us.
Cheers, guys.
Cheers. Thank you very much. Thank you.
Direct and to the point. You're not kidding. That was John Bailey. Still to this day, Wembley's only Bournemouth goal scorer. Of course, Callum Wilson did it for England. And when we played Spurs in that 5-0 defeat at Wembley Stadium, Stanislas did put it between the posts, but he was ruled out for offside. So he's still got that record for now. Hopefully, at some point in the future, that might change. Hey, brilliant interview. Okay, so there we go. That's another one in the can. Of course, you can watch it if you want. It's on youtube.com/AFCB podcast. A bit of footage intermingled with that as well. And plus, well, we've got a two-parter coming up, you audio listeners here in podcast land. And those are comprising the thoughts and words of Ted McDougall. Legend. The 9-goal FA Cup goal-scoring hero. We talk about his career, his highlights, and you know what? He's a bit outspoken about what's happening today as well. You cannot miss that. You can watch it, of course, on YouTube already, should you wish to. But if you want to wait, we'll get it into your ears as soon as possible. So bear with us. We'll be putting it out in the forthcoming weeks. Until then, though, thanks for listening to the Lockdown Interviews.
Fletcher and Steen looking to get in.